From the Voice of America, this is Learning English Weekend. I'm Katie Weaver. It is Saturday, March 12th, and I'm here in the Learning English studio with Mario Ritter. Hi, Mario.
Hello, Katie.
Thanks for joining me today. We have an interesting mix of reports on the show, starting with your European economic news.
That's right. Central bank officials are lowering interest rates and taking other actions to try to stimulate the economy. Actually, the efforts are similar to those the U.S. government made to deal with the 2008 financial crisis.
We also have some decidedly lighter news. Later, I will tell you about the animated movie Zootopia, a Disney hit with critics and moviegoers.
Plus, we have a story from Dan Friedel about the doping case involving tennis star Maria Sharapova. And we hear from Dorothy Gundy about Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's visit to D.C.
He is very popular around this town. And later, we will hear The American Story, The Californian's Tale by Mark Twain. But first, we go back to Mario with some hard news from Europe.
The European Central Bank released a new round of measures to stimulate the European economy, including lowering interest rates more. The financial moves announced Thursday are the latest efforts to lift the economy of the 19-country bloc that uses the euro. The European Central Bank, or ECB, cut all three of its main interest rates. The bank also increased its monthly financial asset buying program. Officials at the ECB hope banks will lend more money to businesses and consumers to help the region's economy. The Eurozone economy has had low economic growth for many years. Growth was 0.3% in the last 3 months of 2015. The ECB's cuts to three main interest rates it controls take effect on March 16th. The rate for deposits with the central bank was cut further to negative 0.4%. The negative interest rate means that depositors pay the bank instead of receiving interest payments. The unusual measure is meant to encourage banks to lend money rather than keep it with the central bank. The ECB also said it would increase the purchase of bonds from 60 billion euros each month to 80 billion euros. The move puts more money into financial institutions that hold the bonds, putting more money into the Eurozone economy. The measures are similar to tactics that the U.S. Central Bank used to boost the American economy during the 2008-2009 world financial crisis. Since then, the U.S. economy has recovered. The unemployment rate now stands at 4.9%. However, central bank policymakers are dissatisfied with economic growth. Many workers are still looking for better-paying full-time jobs rather than the part-time work they accepted. However, slowing growth in China, the second biggest global economy, is blamed for erratic stock market prices around the world. Chinese Premier Li Keqiang recently said China's expected economic growth will be between 6.5% and 7%. I'm Mario Ritter.
Russian tennis star Maria Sharapova has admitted to using a drug banned by the World Anti-Doping Association. But she says she did not know she was violating any rules. Learning English's Dan Friedel has the report.
A few days ago, I received a letter from the ITF that I had failed a drug test at the Australian Open. I did fail the test, and I take full responsibility for it.
That is Maria Sharapova, the Russian tennis player, announced that she failed a test for performance-enhancing drugs at the Australian Open earlier this year. Sharapova said she tested positive for a drug called meldonium, also known as mildronate. She did not know meldonium is another name for mildronate, and she did not know the drug was added to the banned list. Sharapova said she took the drug for 10 years to help with long-term health problems. She did not say how often she used the drug, but doctors said a normal cycle lasts for 6 weeks, and it could be used 2 to 3 times per year. When Sharapova called the press conference, most people said they thought she might announce her retirement. No one thought she was in trouble for failing a drug test. Sharapova became a professional tennis player at 13. She will turn 29 in April. She won her first major championship at Wimbledon in 2004 by defeating Serena Williams. Most people agree Sharapova has it all. Trophies from multiple championships, good looks, and lots of money. During her career, she won all 4 of the world's biggest tennis championships: the Australian Open, the French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open. She is one of the sport's best players, winning over 30 tournaments in her career. She is ranked 7th in the world. Forbes magazine said Sharapova is the richest female athlete. She earned almost $30 million in 2015. The International Tennis Federation, known as the ITF, suspended Sharapova starting on March 12th. The length of the suspension is not known, but it could be as long as 4 years. When the suspension is announced, Sharapova will appeal. She will explain her health problems to a panel and ask for what is called a therapeutic use exemption. The ITF website explains that an exemption can only be granted if a drug does not produce performance enhancement and there is no alternative treatment. Sharapova says she does not want to end her career this way.
I know that with this, I face consequences, and I don't want to end my career this way, and I really hope that I will be given another chance to play this game.
I'm Dan Friedel.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his wife Sophie visited the Obamas at the White House this week. Trudeau is the first Canadian leader to come to Washington in 19 years. Learning English's Dorothy Gundy has more on the visit.
U.S. President Barack Obama welcomed Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to the White House Thursday. The day started with a ceremony on the south lawn of the White House. The two leaders traded compliments and jokes comfortably. Canada and the U.S. are strong allies, and the exchange between Obama and Trudeau showed that. Obama told the audience that America and Canada share many customs and ideals. He cited anti-terrorism, universal health care, freedom of religion, and a love for ice hockey. The United States and Canada are blessed to be neighbors. By choice, we are steadfast allies and the closest of friends, Obama said at the welcoming ceremony. Trudeau, who is 44, campaigned in Canada last autumn on a message of hope and change. His political style is like Obama's. While Trudeau joked with the president that Canada's best exports to the U.S. are ice hockey players, he was serious about the bond between the nations. The relationship between our two countries has always been vital, Trudeau said. We remain united in a common purpose. Both leaders are also fighting climate change. Both leaders plan on putting the International Climate Control Pact into practice. Obama said, "Both nations are threatened by rising seas, melting permafrost, disappearing glaciers, and sea ice." The state dinner guest list included National Hockey League Commissioner Gary Bettman and Canadian-born actors Michael J. Fox, Mike Myers, and Ryan Reynolds. It ended with a state dinner at the White House. The media gushed about Trudeau and his wife, Sophie Gregoire Trudeau, and their personal style. It was the 10th state dinner the Obamas have hosted. The state dinner for Trudeau and his wife Sophie was the first for a Canadian head of government since 1997. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Last weekend, the latest Disney movie, Zootopia, broke records. The movie had the largest opening weekend for a Disney animated film. People across the United States bought more than $75 million worth of tickets. The box office totals pushed the popular movie Frozen to second place in opening weekend success. Experts say Zootopia is expected to stay strong this weekend. They predict it will make as much as $50 million more. Already, the movie's worldwide box office total is more than $230 million. Zootopia is a city of animals. The movie stars a bunny rabbit police officer and a fox criminal who team up to find a missing otter. He is among several animals that have suddenly disappeared from the city. Actor Jennifer Goodwin provided the voice of Officer Judy Hopps. Justin Bateman is Nick, the con artist. Critics have strongly praised Zootopia for its sharp humor and strong message in its portrayal of relations between two kinds of animals in the city. Jared Bush and Phil Johnston wrote Zootopia. They told reporters that it started out as a spy movie set in several different animal worlds. But they found the mammal world especially interesting, so they changed the story. Bush and Johnston said building the imaginary world took a lot of research. They both spoke about it to the website Inside the Magic. Bush said they asked themselves, "What's this world like? What's the history of this world?" And then, he said, they went to the experts. The writers spoke with people who study culture and group behavior, as well as those who study the psychology of individuals. And they talked with animal experts like zookeepers. They learned that the natural world is made up of 90% prey animals and 10% predator animals. Zootopia director Byron Howard said that discovery helped build the film's themes of prejudice and inclusion in a diverse world. The creators have noted that that diversity was not easy to produce in drawings. There are 64 species represented in the movie. There are multiple neighborhoods that represent the different environments of animal habitats. Disney says Zootopia is its most complex animation yet. The extra effort is certainly paying off at the box office.
It is time once again for an American story. Today we hear The Californian's Tale by Mark Twain. Here is your narrator, Shep O'Neill.
When I was young, I went looking for gold in California. I never found enough to make me rich, but I did discover a beautiful part of the country. It was called the Stanislaus. The Stanislaus was like heaven on earth. It had bright green hills and deep forests where soft winds touched the trees. Other men, also looking for gold, had reached the Stanislaus Hills of California many years before I did. They had built a town in the valley with sidewalks and stores, banks and schools. They had also built pretty little houses for their families. At first, they found a lot of gold in the Stanislaus Hills, but their good luck did not last. After a few years, the gold disappeared. By the time I reached the Stanislaus, all the people were gone, too. Grass now grew in the streets, and the little houses were covered by wild rose bushes. Only the sound of insects filled the air as I walked through the empty town that summer day so long ago. Then I realized I was not alone after all. A man was smiling at me as he stood in front of one of the little houses. This house was not covered by wild rose bushes. A nice little garden in front of the house was full of blue and yellow flowers. White curtains hung from the windows and floated in the soft summer wind. Still smiling, the man opened the door of his house and motioned to me. I went inside and could not believe my eyes. I had been living for weeks in rough mining camps with other gold miners. We slept on the hard ground, ate canned beans from cold metal plates, and spent our days in the difficult search for gold. Here in this little house, my spirit seemed to come to life again. I saw a bright rug on the shining wooden floor. Pictures hung all around the room, and on little tables there were seashells, books, and china vases full of flowers. A woman had made this house into a home. The pleasure I felt in my heart must have shone on my face. The man read my thoughts. "Yes," he smiled, "it is all her work. Everything in this room has felt the touch of her hand." One of the pictures on the wall was not hanging straight. He noticed it and went to fix it. He stepped back several times to make sure the picture was really straight. Then he gave it a gentle touch with his hand. "She always does that," he explained to me. "It is like the finishing pat a mother gives her child's hair after she has brushed it. I have seen her fix all these things so often that I can do it just the way she does. I don't know why I do it. I just do it." As he talked, I realized there was something in this room that he wanted me to discover. I looked around. When my eyes reached a corner of the room near the fireplace, he broke into a happy laugh and rubbed his hands together. "That's it," he cried out. "You have found it. I knew you would. It is her picture." I went to a little black shelf that held a small picture of the most beautiful woman I had ever seen. There was a sweetness and softness in the woman's expression that I had never seen before. The man took the picture from my hands and stared at it. "She was 19 on her last birthday. That was the day we were married. When you see her, oh, just wait until you meet her." "Where is she now?" I asked. "Oh, she is away," the man sighed, putting the picture back on the little black shelf. "She went to visit her parents. They live 40 or 50 miles from here. She has been gone 2 weeks today." "When will she be back?" I asked. "Well, this is Wednesday," he said slowly. "She will be back on Saturday, in the evening." I felt a sharp sense of regret. "I am sorry, because I will be gone by then," I said. "Gone? No, why should you go? Don't go. She will be so sorry. You see, she likes to have people come and stay with us." "No, I really must leave," I said firmly. He picked up her picture and held it before my eyes. "Here," he said. "Now you tell her to her face that you could have stayed to meet her and you would not." Something made me change my mind as I looked at the picture for a second time. I decided to stay. The man told me his name was Henry. That night, Henry and I talked about many different things, but mainly about her. The next day passed quietly. Thursday evening, we had a visitor. He was a big, gray-haired miner named Tom. "I just came for a few minutes to ask when she's coming home," he explained. "Is there any news?" "Oh, yes," the man replied. "I got a letter. Would you like to hear it?" He took a yellowed letter out of his shirt pocket and read it to us. It was full of loving messages to him and to other people, their close friends and neighbors. When the man finished reading it, he looked at his friend. "Oh, no, you are doing it again, Tom. You always cry when I read a letter from her. I'm going to tell her this time." "No, you must not do that, Henry," the gray-haired miner said. "I am getting old, and any little sorrow makes me cry. I really was hoping she would be here tonight." The next day, Friday, another old miner came to visit. He asked to hear the letter. The message in it made him cry, too. "We all miss her so much," he said. Saturday finally came. I found I was looking at my watch very often. Henry noticed this. "You don't think something has happened to her, do you?" he asked me. I smiled and said that I was sure she was just fine. But he did not seem satisfied. I was glad to see his two friends, Tom and Joe, coming down the road as the sun began to set. The old miners were carrying guitars. They also brought flowers and a bottle of whiskey. They put the flowers in vases and began to play some fast and lively songs on their guitars. Henry's friends kept giving him glasses of whiskey, which they made him drink. When I reached for one of the two glasses left on the table, Tom stopped my arm. "Drop that glass and take the other one," he whispered. He gave the remaining glass of whiskey to Henry just as the clock began to strike midnight. Henry emptied the glass. His face grew whiter and whiter. "Boys," he said, "I am feeling sick. I want to lie down." Henry was asleep almost before the words were out of his mouth. In a moment, his two friends had picked him up and carried him into the bedroom. They closed the door and came back. They seemed to be getting ready to leave, so I said, "Please don't go, gentlemen. She will not know me. I am a stranger to her." They looked at each other. "His wife has been dead for 19 years, Tom said.
"Dead?" I whispered.
"Dead or worse," he said. "She went to see her parents about 6 months after she got married. On her way back, on a Saturday evening in June, when she was almost here, the Indians captured her. No one ever saw her again. Henry lost his mind. He thinks she is still alive. When June comes, he thinks she has gone on her trip to see her parents. Then he begins to wait for her to come back. He gets out that old letter, and we come around to visit so he can read it to us. On the Saturday night she is supposed to come home, we come here to be with him. We put a sleeping drug in his drink so he will sleep through the night. Then he is all right for another year." Joe picked up his hat and his guitar.
"We have done this every June for 19 years, he said. "The first year there were 27 of us. Now just the two of us are left."
He opened the door of the pretty little house, and the two old men disappeared into the darkness of the Stanislaus.
And that's Learning English Weekend for Saturday. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Thanks for joining us.